Have you ever found yourself swallowing your true feelings to keep the peace, only to explode later in a moment of frustration? Or perhaps you've delivered brutal honesty that left relationships in tatters? David Augsburger's groundbreaking work, Caring Enough to Confront, offers a revolutionary third option, carefronting. This approach, which has influenced relationship experts from Brené Brown to John Gottman, combines truth with love to create authentic connections. The book has sold over 1 million copies since its original 1973 publication and remains a staple in counseling programs worldwide. Oprah Winfrey once featured it as her Relationship Book of the Month, praising its practical wisdom for navigating difficult conversations. At its core is a deceptively simple yet profound principle. Confront others as you would have them confront you. Let's explore how this transformative approach can revolutionize your relationships. Caring feels good. Confronting often feels bad. Yet when separated, each loses its power. Care without confrontation becomes permissiveness that eventually breeds resentment. Confrontation without care becomes judgment that triggers defensiveness. The genius of care fronting lies in its integration, combining genuine concern for the relationship with honest truth-telling. This delicate balance requires emotional intelligence, timing, and genuine commitment to both the person and the truth. Jesus modeled this approach perfectly. With the woman caught in adultery, he confronted her accuser's hypocrisy while showing her compassion, famously declaring, "Neither do I condemn you, go and sin no more." With the rich young ruler, he lovingly identified the man's core obstacle to spiritual growth by pointing out his attachment to wealth. When dealing with his disciples' failures, he consistently balanced correction with encouragement. In every interaction, Jesus balanced grace with truth, demonstrating what Paul would later describe as speaking the truth in love. This balanced approach offers 5 distinct ways to handle conflict, each appropriate in different situations. Withdrawal when timing isn't right or safety is at risk, such as leaving an emotionally charged situation to cool down. Win-lose confrontation when principles demand it, like standing firm on ethical issues or non-negotiable values. Compromise when partial solutions serve both parties, finding middle ground on preferences or methods. Yielding when the issue matters more to others, letting go of personal preferences for the sake of harmony. Collaborative problem solving when the relationship and issue both matter deeply, working together to find solutions that honor both parties. Care fronting represents this 5th approach, valuing both the relationship and the truth simultaneously. It requires careful attention to timing, tone, and context. For example, choosing private settings for difficult conversations, using I statements instead of accusations, and acknowledging shared goals before addressing problems. It refuses to sacrifice either honesty or connection, creating space for genuine transformation rather than mere compliance or avoidance. The practice involves specific skills like active listening, empathy, and clear communication. When implementing carefronting, one might begin with affirming the relationship, clearly state observations without judgment, express impact and concerns, and invite dialogue about solutions. This approach recognizes that most people can handle difficult truths when they feel genuinely cared for and respected. When we care enough to confront, we demonstrate our belief that the relationship is strong enough to handle difficult truths and grow stronger through them. This requires courage, wisdom, and patience, understanding that true change often happens gradually through sustained carefronting rather than through single confrontational moments. Effective carefronting begins with what Augsburger calls truthing, a simplified speech style that combines clarity with compassion. This approach starts with deep listening, attending fully to the other person with eyes, ears, and soul. Love begins with listening, not merely hearing words, but understanding experiences, validating perspectives, and connecting with feelings. This requires setting aside our own agenda temporarily and creating space for the other person's reality to emerge fully. When it's time to speak, truthing requires four essential elements. Simplicity rather than complexity, using clear, straightforward language without jargon or embellishment. Personal ownership, I think, not people think, taking responsibility for our thoughts and feelings. Honesty without selective truth-telling, sharing the complete truth even when uncomfortable. Directness without manipulation, communicating clearly while avoiding hidden agendas or passive-aggressive tactics. Consider how differently these approaches sound and their impact. You always interrupt me versus I feel frustrated when I can't finish my thoughts. You need to be more responsible versus I'm concerned about these missed deadlines. Everyone thinks you're being unreasonable versus I'm struggling to understand your perspective. You never listen to me versus I feel unheard when we discuss important matters. That's a terrible idea versus I have some concerns about this approach. Truthing builds trust by welcoming others into the sacred space where our most important truths reside. When we bottle feelings or constantly yield, it's okay when it's not, we prevent authentic connection. This pattern of suppression creates emotional distance and eventually leads to resentment. Instead, we must keep short books with feelings, pairing what is felt with what is wanted. I care about you and I want to be close. This dual message acknowledges both the relationship's importance and the need for change. This approach requires a covenant of mutual respect where both parties agree to see issues as shared problems rather than blaming one person, deal only with their part of the relationship process, make changes in their half of the shared relationship, preserve each person's freedom to be wholly themselves, maintain confidentiality about sensitive discussions, commit to regular check-ins about relationship health, accept that growth and change take time. The practice of truthing also involves regular self-reflection to maintain awareness of our own feelings, careful timing of difficult conversations, recognition of cultural differences in communication styles, willingness to be vulnerable and admit mistakes, commitment to finding solutions rather than proving points. Through truthing, we create the foundation for relationships where both caring and confronting can flourish. This balanced approach allows for both nurturing connection and necessary challenge, creating relationships that are both authentic and growth-promoting. Anger is fundamentally a demand, often a multi-layered pile of demands ranging from situational frustrations to deeper self-worth issues. When someone cuts you off in traffic, your anger might contain demands like drive safely, respect my space, and acknowledge my value. These demands may not be explicitly stated, but fuel our resentments nonetheless. Freedom from destructive anger begins by tracking down, naming, and taking ownership of these demands. Once identified, we can either negotiate the ones that matter or release those that don't. Our anger emerges from our innate sense of self-worth. When we feel our preciousness is ignored or injured, we respond with demands. While explosive anger dissipates needed energy and offers only momentary relief, clearly expressed anger can slice through emotional barriers to establish genuine contact. The key is using I messages that own responsibility rather than you messages that attack others. You're so inconsiderate becomes I feel hurt when plans change without notice. You never listen becomes I need to feel heard when I share important things. You're always late becomes I feel disrespected when I'm kept waiting. Anger becomes constructive when directed by love and awareness of the other's equal preciousness. Jesus modeled this balanced approach, showing both righteous anger toward injustice and compassionate love toward people. Maturity means learning to be angry at behaviors while remaining loving toward persons. This distinction transforms anger from a destructive force into creative energy that builds bridges rather than burns them. By owning our anger, recognizing its demands, and expressing them clearly, we convert potential relationship poison into medicine for growth and deeper connection. Confrontation, though uncomfortable, is a necessary gift that prevents human beings from becoming self-centered and relationships from growing stale. While affronting others is easy, pointing fingers, assigning blame, making accusations, true confrontation is an art requiring balance between candor and care. Effective confrontation must be built on a foundation of caring, support, empathy, trust, affirmation, understanding, and love. Power without love becomes ruthless. Love without power remains helpless. Only when they work together can authentic relating flourish. 8 essential skills make confrontation effective. 1. Focus on actions, not actors. This report has 3 errors, rather than, you're careless. 2. Share observations, not conclusions. You've missed 3 meetings, rather than, you don't care about this project. 3. Offer descriptions, not judgments. Your voice is raised, rather than, you're being hostile. 4. Address quantity, not quality. You interrupted me twice, rather than, you're rude. 5. Provide information and alternatives, not advice. Here's what happened when, rather than, you should. 6. Give only what's useful to the receiver. 7. Choose optimal timing and setting. 8. Focus on what and how, rather than why. These skills help separate issues from people, allowing us to be hard on problems while remaining connected to others. The key is uniting caring and confronting into carefronting, using and instead of but to maintain connection while addressing issues. I love you, but this behavior concerns me becomes I love you and this behavior concerns me. I respect your work, but we need to discuss this mistake becomes I respect your work and we need to discuss this mistake. This subtle shift maintains the relationship while addressing the issue, preventing the dismissal that often follows a but statement. 5 guidelines for effective confrontation include confronting caringly, gently, constructively, respectfully, and clearly, creating space for growth rather than shame. Trust is the fundamental bedrock upon which all effective human relationships are built. Without it, confrontation becomes threatening and counterproductive. With it, confrontation serves as a powerful tool for deepening rapport and fostering mutual understanding. Basic trust, as pioneering psychologist Erik Erikson demonstrates in his developmental theory, represents the first and most crucial learning experience in every child's life, forming the essential foundation for all subsequent emotional and social development. Trust operates as a dynamic two-way experience. Being trusted enhances our sense of capability and self-worth, empowering us to take positive risks and grow, while distrust triggers defensive responses and creates anxiety that inhibits authentic connection. When others trust us, we naturally rise to meet their expectations. When they doubt us, we often retreat into protective behaviors. Trust requires both faith and calculated risk-taking, advancing like an intricate dance where each partner's steps of openness and self-disclosure must be met with corresponding movements of shared commitment and respectful boundaries. Trust-building behaviors manifest in several critical ways. Respecting individual freedom and autonomy versus attempting to control or manipulate others' choices. Making honest, transparent statements versus using subtle manipulation or hidden agendas. Demonstrating willingness to take emotional risks versus remaining neutral when feelings intensify. Showing authentic vulnerability as an equal participant versus maintaining emotional distance when others express weakness. Creating space for spontaneous choices and natural consequences versus demanding rigid commitments. Offering tentative statements that invite dialogue versus dogmatically asserting unchangeable opinions. acknowledging mistakes openly versus defending or justifying inappropriate actions. Maintaining consistent behavior across different contexts versus showing situational trustworthiness. Trust must be carefully balanced with appropriate mistrust, creating a productive tension that generates hope and possibility. We learn to trust others enough to be vulnerable while maintaining healthy boundaries that protect our well-being. This delicate balance allows confrontation to be received as an act of genuine care and concern rather than as criticism or attack. When someone trusts us enough to offer feedback, it demonstrates their investment in our growth and development. When trust is firmly established, confrontation transforms from a threatening experience into an invitation for mutual growth and understanding. The person being confronted can receive the message without feeling their fundamental worth or value is being questioned. This psychological safety creates the necessary foundation for genuine change and personal development to occur. Trust becomes the container that holds both support and challenge, allowing relationships to deepen through honest communication and shared vulnerability. The process of building trust requires patience, consistency, and regular deposits in the emotional bank account of relationships. Small acts of reliability, kept promises, and demonstrated respect accumulate over time to create a reservoir of goodwill that can sustain relationships through challenging conversations and necessary confrontations. Nothing undermines effective conflict resolution like blame. Augsburger contrasts the credo for chronic conflict, focusing on fault, with the motto for care-fronting conflict, focusing on responsibility without blame or shame. Responsibility is forward-looking and constructive, while blame and shame are backward-looking and destructive. In ongoing relationships, it takes two people to have a problem. We are the problem, not just one individual. Using examples of marital conflicts, Augsburger shows how initial appearances of one-sided blame, 90-10 or 99-1, typically balance out to equal responsibility when both perspectives are considered. A husband feels his wife is 90% responsible for their communication problems because she's always critical. She feels he's 90% responsible because he withdraws and stonewalls. In reality, they're caught in a cycle where her criticism triggers his withdrawal, which increases her criticism, a perfect 50-50 responsibility. Self-blame is equally destructive because we blame ourselves for the wrong reasons, aren't qualified to judge ourselves, and create a lose-lose situation where both the blamer and blamed within us suffer. Self-criticism tends to be cyclical, repeating the same patterns rather than creating change. Our memories are selective and unreliable for assigning blame. Augsburger describes memory as museum, selective artifacts, mystery, biased fragments, myth, subjective interpretation, and personal story. Jesus and Paul both warned against judging others when we cannot accurately judge ourselves. Love ends blaming games and focuses on responsibility, asking what's the loving thing to do now and where we go from here. This shift from blame to responsibility transforms conflict from a battle to be won into a problem to be solved together. We struggle to communicate effectively when we're engaged in inner civil war or feel constantly judged. Life becomes a perpetual courtroom where we're always on trial, appointing others as judges with gavels. This pattern leads us to work for praise, which we mistake for love, and fear criticism, which we mistake for rejection. Freedom comes from reclaiming the gavels we've distributed and refusing those others delegate to us. As we internalize our locus of evaluation rather than seeking external validation, we become responsible agents and mature adults. Augsburger illustrates this with examples of siblings reclaiming their power from judgmental relationships, including a powerful parallel to the prodigal son story, where the returning son must refuse to be judged by his elder brother. The hardest challenge is accepting love without feeling we must earn it first. To enjoy another person is like enjoying a sunset. We don't command it to change colors, we simply appreciate it with awe. Joy happens when we truly accept others and are accepted ourselves, faults and all. This is the essence of grace, the enjoyment of being enjoyed. When a friend comes close enough to see our faults and still loves us, we experience profound joy. Similarly, being truly heard creates joy. That moistness around the eyes when someone cares enough to hear not just our words, but our very being. In solitude, we can discover this acceptance through honest self-conversation and prayer, ultimately realizing the truth that we are already accepted. Three key affirmations help us practice accepting ourselves without judgment. 1. Choosing not to reject our actions merely because someone criticizes them. 2. Refusing to disown or make excuses for our behavior. 3. Changing only out of respect for others' feelings and rights, not from fear of judgment. As we reclaim our worth independent of others' judgments, we become free to give and receive love without conditions, what the New Testament calls grace. Change seems impossible for some people who repeat self-defeating patterns, while others demonstrate remarkable growth and adaptability. The difference lies in our openness to new possibilities rather than seeing ourselves as products of fate. Learning is integrative, not additive. It reorganizes our inner information and allows us to reconfigure attitudes in new ways. The fatalistic script that says, "I can't change," falsely claims we're merely products of our environment. Though we didn't choose our birth or parents, we aren't passive. We can think in new ways, see from different perspectives, and move in new directions. Starting over begins with owning responsibility for the past without self-punishment. The process requires confession, accepting responsibility for where we are, repentance, choosing to make change, and conversion, reaching for strength from God and others. True change happens when we can honestly say, "I have done wrong. I own it. I am responsible. I am choosing to end that behavior and live in a new way." This requires both vulnerability and responsibility. Vulnerability means letting the need for change penetrate our defenses. We often freeze when facing our mistakes, fearing we'll lose others' respect or friendship. Yet voluntary vulnerability actually creates trust, builds respect, and deepens relationships. People become lovable, believable, and authentically alive when vulnerable. Responsibility isn't merely a command from authority, but responsibility, the capacity to respond. As we choose vulnerability by admitting failures and hurts, we discover strength to respond in new ways. This strength comes partly from within and partly from God's Spirit. The pairing of vulnerability with responsibility becomes a continuous process and the key to growth, relationships, and discovering God's transformative work. Hope, that change is possible, that forgiveness and acceptance are available, that life can be new. Peacemaking follows a predictable rule. You can either make peace or get credit for it, never both. True peacemakers build bridges meant to be walked on, suspending connections between disconnected people. This requires stubborn patience, long-range vision, and commitment to universal principles that value all humans equally. Peacemakers operate from conscientious wisdom, an inner compass guided by examined values rather than conformity, even when this makes them appear out of step with their communities. This inner-driven courage to be responsible, believe in values, and act with purpose demands vulnerability, exposing one to ridicule and rejection. As demonstrated by figures like Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, and Oscar Schindler, conscientious wisdom is an act of faith that choosing right is best even when costly. It requires trusting that time will vindicate rightness even when friends condemn you now. True peacemakers engage in both curative work, healing torn relationships, and preventive actions, addressing building hostilities before they explode. They develop special characteristics. They see people not by their worst actions, but by what they can become. They look for strengths in others and encourage them. They practice agape love, equal regard that values neighbors as self. This Jesus way of loving isn't about feelings but actions, a warm, generous commitment to act for others' welfare without needing reciprocation, understanding, praise, or thanks. People matter most in this approach. Those who accept Jesus as their authority practice this love not because it's safe or clever, but because it's the Jesus thing to do, the only way certain to triumph ultimately, eternally. This approach to conflict resolution sees beyond immediate solutions to the deeper healing of relationships and communities. How we react to conflict reveals our core spiritual values. Augsburger identifies three primary streams of spirituality that shape our approach to conflict. Monopolar spirituality focuses on self-discovery, self-development, and inner depth. Popular in New Age retreats and contemporary spirituality, it seeks meaning through connecting with one's inner sacred self and with nature. While just beginning steps, these spiritual awakenings shouldn't be disparaged. Bipolar spirituality begins with encountering God as other. It emerges through a life-death experience where one's self-created God dies and one meets the sovereign God beyond human manipulation. For some, this is primarily intellectual, reorienting life around God's providence. For others, it's emotional, experiencing God as daily presence. Tripolar spirituality recognizes the inseparable unity between loving God and loving neighbor. It sees God's presence in others and follows Jesus' radical teaching that loving others is equivalent to loving God. This path demands commitment beyond rational calculation, a post-logical love without conditions or exceptions. These different spiritualities approach forgiveness and conflict differently. Self-oriented spirituality sees forgiveness as self-healing. God-oriented spirituality sees it as duty. Love of neighbor and God spirituality works for genuine reconciliation. Jesus' greatest commandment encompasses all three poles, loving God, neighbor, and self. This integrated spirituality provides the foundation for care fronting, seeing the divine image in others even while addressing difficult truths. When we recognize that every person bears the image of God, confrontation becomes an act of honoring that divine spark rather than diminishing it. We confront not to tear down, but to build up, not to separate, but to connect more authentically. This spiritual foundation transforms conflict from something to be feared into an opportunity for deeper communion with both God and others.